It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Hello, Watch Forest Focus. We thought today might be the day when we finally discover if Nottingham Forest will be hit with a Premier League points deduction, but it looks like that wait will go on until Monday, by which point Forest will, of course, play relegation rivals Luton Town. We'll discuss today's lack of news, the future profit and sustainability with new rules set to be announced, and we'll give our final thoughts on the Luton game in the company of, first of all, Greg Mitchell. Greg, afternoon. How are you doing? You muted yourself.
I'll start again.
What a start.
Feeling great, excited. Like it's a, feels like a big cup game, doesn't it, coming up? Just that anticipation and ready to go. So bring it on.
Good. Bring it on. I'm glad you're excited. You're always a man of faith. Well done for putting that bet on in the week when the rest of us were so negative.
Ridiculous.
It was just mad, like, I was that annoyed with how you were all being, not all of you, you know, yourself.
Just me.
Mark. Yes. To name a few. I thought, I've got to do this just to like, oh yeah, I was being petty, to shove it in your face a little bit. So, and it worked.
Well, you made some cash. Greg bet on Bournemouth to win when it was at halftime, by the way, for those who didn't see. So well done, Greg Mitchell. Faith of a nun, I think I said. Second guest today is Michael Temple. Temps, how are you doing?
Out of the relegation zone and feeling great, thanks, mate. Has Greg got a mixing desk down below? He just pressed some kind of magic button to get off mute, didn't he? Rather than fiddling around with his mouse and clicking like we all do. And the last thing I'll say before this becomes a peppering Greg session, how many stupid bets must he have had and not told us about to have one like that come off?
That's true.
I'm going to send you my annual report after this.
Third guest today is Mikey Clark. Mikey, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm all right, thank you. Yeah, really good. Greg tweeted a picture of his new setup about 10 minutes ago. Looks incredible. Wish you could turn your camera around, Greg, and show everybody.
And you'd see all like the rubbish on the floor.
Right, let's get down to business then. Like I said at the top there, we thought today would be the day when we might hear about if Forest had got a points deduction. The Athletic are reporting it's Monday, and like we think it's going to be Monday. You never know, but it looks like Monday's the day. So I suppose the question is, I'll ask you first, Greg. Good news, bad news, makes no difference when it comes to the weekend for you?
Good news. I mean, just look at, I suppose, an idiot like me, how I've came on today talking about it feels like a cup final, this, that, the other. We're not talking about, oh no, we've lost some points or we haven't or what have you. It's all about the football this weekend, and I think that's how it should be, and we'll deal with the off-the-field issues on Monday after hopefully a few points down at Luton.
What about you, Temps? Same question.
It's coming at some point, isn't it? So I'd rather know now. I think everybody would rather know so we can focus on the task at hand and make it all about the football. My read is that there'll be dialogue in the margins. Forest will be very accepting of something in that 3 to 4 point region. And I hope that's the worst case scenario. To Greg's point, though, go to Luton, get the result. It matters less at that point. That no result is going to influence the sanction that's going to be imposed upon us. So task in hand is absolutely beating Luton, as it would have been if we'd learned about the points deduction by now. So my hunch is 3-4. I think we're going to go down there and get a result. So let's get to it.
Yeah, I think I'd rather have known, unless it's like anything over 6 points, then it puts a negative slant on it for me, because 6 points is kind of what people are expecting, 6 points or less, obviously, hopefully. But I think personally, I'd kind of like to have known and got it out of the way, but I can see why it'd be a good thing not to know. What about you, Mikey?
Yeah, I'm with Temps. I think I'd rather have known personally, but then you've got to think about the players that they will be preparing. They'll have the mindset, they'll have drilled all the tactics, team shape, all that sort of stuff like that. Do they want to be coming in on a Friday and being told, actually, you're now in the relegation zone? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But I think personally, I'd rather know. But maybe there is an argument to say, let's get this huge game, biggest game of the season so far out of the way, see where the land lies, and then take our punishment, whatever it'll be.
Let me just thank a few people who've signed up for membership. Richard Mays, GTM77. Inderjeet Danjal, I think I've said that right, Inderjeet, and then Octopus Competitive Intelligence, which I guess is someone's work account probably, and not their formal name. And also thank you to Charlie Price in Arlington, Virginia for the $5 donation. Very kind, Charlie, and good to have you with us for a live stream. We'll stick on PSR. Oh, another donation. Oh, okay. This is from FPL Joe. That's Joe Need, who's a good guy. I just donated £5 to your last man standing, Joe. So I feel like I've kind of a net zero in that sense. But I'll give it another retweet as well before I lose badly. The first last man standing I did, I said Forest would beat Blackpool in the FA Cup, and I was out in week one. So hopefully better this time. Right. Sticking with PSR. The Premier League looks like they're going to announce new rules heading into next season. It's basically they're going to ditch the £105 million limit you can lose over a three-year period. And they're going to bring it in line with squad cost ratio, which is what UEFA have, as a successor to FFP. And that means, basically, you divide your wage budget, transfer amortisation costs. If anyone knows this better than me, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's around player value and length of contract left and how their value dwindles as their contract goes on, and also agent fees by annual revenue. The Premier League are aiming for 85% squad cost ratio, meaning clubs need to have their wage budget and amortization. So I think I'm a Bamadeli. Mikey's almost got there with that now. Costs below 85% of their revenue. So in short, that would probably hurt clubs who are kind of upwardly mobile like Newcastle and Villa. But everyone's friend Kieran Maguire also says Fulham, West Ham, Wolves and Forest would also be at risk due to their comparatively low incomes, and also Leeds and Leicester. I guess it means basically if you've got a big stadium, then it really favours you, and big clubs tend to have big stadiums. What are your initial thoughts on it? I'll come to Temps first. I feel like he certainly understands this more than me, and then I'll see how Greg and Mikey get on with it.
What it is a means of established clubs blocking capital injections from wealthy aspirant owners. So it is designed to preserve the status quo, those teams that have been there for a long time and have income from the likes of broadcast, commercial partnerships and match day revenues that are far beyond the likes of newly promoted teams because of the size of the stadia. They're established distributions from UEFA, Champions League cash, prize money, and the like. So it is an unofficial ring fencing of the top six. It means that those established clubs are mindful to protect their position and do not want a scenario where the Saudi sovereign wealth fund comes in at Newcastle, has limitless wealth, but cannot find a way to inject it without it not counting towards these profit and sustainability rules. So it's bad news for us. We don't quite have the wealth of the Saudi state. We've got an owner whose bankroll is significant, but he can't inject it into the club because that calculation excludes cash injections from owners. So what that means is if we're to turn over 100 million quid from those three income streams, broadcast, commercial partnerships and match day revenues, tickets and beers, we can only spend £85 million on wages. Spurs turn over £1 billion from the same activities, they can spend £850 million on wages. So designed to protect the status quo. We'll see positive chat around it from fans owners, boards of those clubs, and we'll see negative voices from those that aspire to reach it. So, yeah, bad news for us, and it's one of those scenarios that's voted upon in the name of self-interest, unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, I do love the Premier League in many senses. Like, when I know people are coming to hate it, but I love it when we win a game because it just feels massive. Like, every point is so hard earned. But the kind of off the field stuff, Greg, it's kind of depressing and stuff like this. And increasingly, it feels like a top six protection racket, doesn't it?
Mm. And when I read it, I thought it benefited Chelsea. I thought it kind of fit into what they've been trying to do anyway. And they say there's going to be a swift development of it. So it'll be in for next season, which is just so convenient. It does. It protects the racket at the top, doesn't it? And when I read it, I mean, obviously, I hope we stay in the Premier League for forevermore. But when I read it, I thought the biggest way for Forest to benefit from this, which I'd absolutely hate and be against, is a new, shiny, bigger stadium with better income, better facilities and all that. And, you know, that worries me because it plays into that side of the game as well. But it does. It just benefits. I mean, Temps, I can't say it any better than Temps did, but it just benefits those at the top and stops the ambitious clubs like ourselves who have got money to spend and have got the ambition of, you know, getting into that top 10 area of the Premier League. It's just going to make it harder and harder as the years go by. And, you know, frankly, these clubs that we say are eventually going to get punished, there's no sign of that, is there? And it's just kick the teams like us. So, yeah, it's not very good, but we know the rules. And unfortunately, we knew them last year and we're waiting to see what happens with this.
Over 400 people watching watching live. So it'd be interesting to know what people think about the question I asked Mikey, and Greg touched on it there. I mean, on the face of it, Mikey, and do feel free to give your thoughts on the issue in general, but moving stadium probably would be beneficial financially, as painful as it might be. Is it something you consider more now if it makes us more viable long-term as a Premier League club, or definitely not?
I think when you look at something like this, and if this is going to be the way forward, the words that come to sort of spring to mind are closed shop, like a closed shop. And it's almost like it does benefit those more quote-unquote established, bigger clubs with bigger stadium, bigger revenue, bigger finances. You know, the emotive kind of incredible story where a team comes up from the Championship or League One, like we did in the 70s, wins the league, wins cups, that's just not going to happen under these rules. It's just it's almost impossible for that to happen now, never mind with these rules coming in. So what is the future for Nottingham Forest then? Well, it probably is a new state. Like if there is a genuine desire and a genuine desire just to get into and to break into that top 10, then the only way we're going to do that is to increase revenue streams. And obviously the biggest thing for that is a new stadium. But that obviously comes with almost ripping part of your heart and soul from your club. You know, I looked at Greg's face then when he answered that question, and the thought of not being at the City Ground, you can see it in him. And it's the same for a lot of us. And we just have to weigh up, you know, what do we want? Do we want to be pushing towards this quote-unquote close shot, pushing towards the top 10? If we do, then unless something comes out of the woodwork or something that we've not considered, that's the only way we're going to do it, is to increase those revenue streams. And the biggest one is obviously the ground. So it's not something I want to do, but what is the alternative? Is the alternative scratching around the bottom six for the next 10 years? Getting relegated, coming back up, going back down? I don't know. I don't know the answer. I mean, I've read a lot of articles on this, and it feels unfair, these rules. But then I'm asking myself, well, could I come up with a better rule? I'm not sure something exists to give that sort of parity for everybody competing. But the only thing I can think of in my head as well is Super League. You know, do some of these teams eventually go and join a Super League, which makes the likes of us and Wolves and the rest of the teams that are trying to push towards sort of mid-table obscurity, does it give us something more to fight for? I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, Matt. I don't want to move away from the City Ground. Of course I don't. But do I want to be in a relegation fight for the next 10 years? No, not really. It just feels like I said before at the start of the answer, it's a closed shop, and it's really gutting, really. Or you on mute, Matt?
Muted myself ages ago because a plane flew overhead. Sorry. Some of these clubs would love to be in a Super League, I'm sure. But yeah, I do think eventually that's probably the way it's going. Thanks very much to Nick Bassett for becoming a member. Nick, appreciate that. And I suppose the other thing you can do, which you kind of do now, is if you get anyone who's good in your academy, you just sell them to a bigger club, and then you kind of, you know, distribute the money, and then eventually the bigger club benefits from your player development, I guess, which again is part of a vicious circle. Which leads to what I was going to ask as well, Thames, around what should PSR rules be? Because if you look at Reading's situation and Bury and other clubs like that, and us with Fawaz, if you get a duff owner, then you know you're in massive trouble. And the rules should be to prevent that. But then if you've got an owner who's got wealth and willing to invest it and run the club in a decent way, then this feels like it's stifling it. So what's the answer? I think you've said before, put a bond down or something like that. How should it work for you?
Yeah, I mean, you are stifling that, aren't you? I mean, the flip side positive aspect is it becomes even harder for a team that's not currently in the 20 to break into that. So we will have a competitive advantage against a team coming up from the Championship who doesn't have two consecutive, eventually three consecutive more years of Premier League broadcast distribution, which is so significantly beyond what you'd get from the Football League. So in terms of establishing ourselves in the Premier League, a lot of questions in the comments, how do you get 14 votes to pass this? Because you need teams from outside the top six to do that. There are plenty of clubs that are happy being in that 14. If you think of the likes of Crystal Palace, Bournemouth, one or two other examples that will spring to mind. That's what they want to be. They have no particular ambition or desire to be up there. They want to be in that mid-table obscurity between 7th and 17th and keep punching above their weight without the need to inject capital. Now, the challenge is a club like ours where the owner wants and can inject capital to accelerate that process of developing a club. It takes a long time to build a stadium, takes a long time to drive commercial revenues to the point they need to be to affect the quality of the squad. And only when you get to those European competitions or the higher echelons of the Premier League do you start to see an increased share of the broadcast distribution. So what should happen? Well, I think there should be a means of an owner of sufficient means to inject their cash into the club, because it's not a risk, is it? It is sustainable if their bankroll allows them to do it. Think of Roman Abramovich when he first came into Chelsea. Think of the Abu Dhabi money flooding into Manchester City. There's numerous examples of the starting point of a team kicking onto that level being a cash injection from outside of their genuine football turnover. So look, I don't know how to do that. I'm not sure that Mr. Marinakis or any owner would particularly want an audit on their wealth, the sources of it, clear sight of it, how it's held, how it's measured. So it is really tough. It's designed to stop a football club being taken on a flight of fancy by an owner who can't afford it. And we've seen in the past through some of the shysters that have owned football clubs elsewhere that you can get yourself into trouble, and you can have a Bury situation where a club at the heart of a community is ripped away. So I don't know what the answer is, but I would like to see a means created for an owner of sufficient wealth to inject cash without it being poured over, blocked by the powers that be in the name of protecting an established top six. The risk for them isn't relegation. The risk for them is falling out of the European money. If we think about Chelsea's situation, or the situation that threatened Man United briefly at the start of the year, they award contracts on 3, 4, 5 year terms, 7, 8, 9 year terms in Chelsea's case, that are dependent on that stream of money, that river of cash never drying up. So all of a sudden you have 2 years out of the Champions League and miss out on that. Your 85% quickly erodes away and they find themselves having a fire sale. So there is some risk for those top six sides that mismanage their recruitment, but yeah, seems like a really grim place to me if a system is designed so we never see the likes of a Luton or whoever it might be going on that flight of fancy through the divisions and establishing themselves at the very top. We're going to get hit because I don't think our ambition is to be just surviving every year. We want to kick on. And if we are going to kick on, we need to navigate, lobby for a set of rules that allows cash injections from owners.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Because I think Greg, you've got to have something. Like the independent regulator's meant to be coming in, and eventually I hope it will. I mean, rich idiots can buy football clubs, but you probably have to have protections against them collapsing in their community. But, you can't. It's got to be, ironically, it's got to be something sustainable. And this doesn't feel sustainable to me with the setup we've got now.
And that's the annoyance with it. When you say like rich idiots can come in, we've seen that with a previous owner, haven't we? It was a disaster, and that's why rules are there. But you know, with our owner, he's not just putting into the football club. He's been putting into the city as well. And it just, you know, it doesn't feel like we should be the ones getting punished for things like that. And I think going back to the stadium, where I think we've all kind of gone down the route of, oh, maybe a new stadium's the only way. We can't be lazy and think the City Ground can't be developed to a modern stadium standard. It can. It's just going to take a lot more work to get there. You look at Liverpool now, you know, it's one of the Anfield is one of the Premier League stadiums, and that's been built in a much harder area than the City Ground. So there is a way. It's just, are we committed to try and do it? Because it can be done. So we can't just say the only option is a new stadium. But yeah, it just goes back to what everyone's been saying. It is not set up for a club like us to prosper. And that's why we're against it. And, you know, rightfully so. And I think we vote against it as well, these new ones that are going to be swiftly developed and put in next year?
Well, there wasn't really a vote. We'll come on to the EFL thing, because that's a bone of contention, certainly. There's a comment here from Spencer Mikey about how, in fact, you boys will know better than me about NFL and how funds are distributed evenly between the leagues. In Germany, you have 51% ownership for fans and stuff like that. And I think it's the same in Holland for some clubs as well. I guess that kind of utopian dream's gone now with the sheer financial juggernaut that the Premier League is, Mikey.
That's exactly what it is. I'm glad Spencer's put this, because I was just thinking about America and how it works over there. So I think the difference is the Premier League is just huge around the world. So I do quite a bit of travelling, work abroad quite a bit, and you just would not believe the amount of coverage it gets outside of England. I'm probably more attuned to it now my team is part of the Premier League. But you go anywhere, you go to India, you go to the Far East, you go to South Africa, it's on every pub, every TV. It's just massive. It's just massive. So you can, yes, it's the same sport. You can compare it to the American League, German League or whatever, but it's a worldwide product, is the Premier League, and there's so much money swirling around. Logic tells me in my head that's kind of why they've done that, because it's taken 20-odd years, maybe more, to sort of grow it into this phenomenon and that's what it is. They don't want to jeopardize it with anything. So it is a little bit like a closed shop. So I think one of the other arguments that somebody mentioned to me was around the NFL. I'll just head that off really, really quickly. So they have a wage cap and they have a player salary cap and they have cap spend. And you can only spend so much. And the reason they do that is so games aren't boring on TV. So you don't necessarily get the same team winning all the time and same team losing. They want it to be competitive. They want the TV rights. And that game is governed by TV. So you tend to have teams go up and down, up and down. But there's no relegation there. There's no threat of jeopardy. It's the same team. Whereas in football, there's a threat of jeopardy. Temps was saying you drop out the European places, you get pinged for a load of money, you get relegated, you get a parachute payment that only lasts a certain amount of time. And even if you look at things like, do we bring in a player salary cap? Do we have, you know, limits that way? The problem you've got is football's a worldwide sport, whereas, say, the NFL is just predominantly played in that one country. If we don't pay them this, they'll go and play somewhere else. Somebody will pay them this amount of money, the players. So we're almost in a catch-22 situation where we want to keep the product. It generates a load of money. It's great to watch most of the time, even when Forest lose. It's quite fun to watch. But when you start chipping that away, when you differentiate yourself with different rules than the rest of the world have, you expose yourself. And rather than get the best players, we might revert back to, say, what we had in 1990, which was it was all about the Italian league. And they'll go and play there. So I genuinely don't know what the answer is. But what I do know is these rules are going to hurt us. And they're going to hurt teams like Wolves and teams that are coming up. And they just don't seem fair. And, you know, we've had conversations in the last week or two about some of the things we're seeing on the pitch not being fair. And then we have this one about off the pitch not being fair. So it does seem like it is, again, a closed shop. And it's very disappointing, but I just don't know the alternative. Every solution seems to have pitfalls.
Let's take a quick second to thank our sponsors, the Trent Navigation. Before we move on, we've got a bit more financial chat, and then we will talk some football before we go. Oasisans are playing at the Big Shed on Saturday the 13th of April. Take a stage at 5:30 p.m. right after Forest play Wolves at the City Ground. As always, entry is free, two outdoor bars, barbecue, food court as well. So that should be a great evening. Right, I did ask the others what their favourite Oasis song was the other day. And Mikey would probably say some super thrash metal song and nothing by Oasis, but he's just shaking his head. We should move on with the clock's ticking. Right, the other thing around FFP that I wanted to talk about was this thing about funding for the EFL. The kind of proposal, or what they want, is to get 14.75 million of net revenue from the Premier League broadcaster, or net media revenue, I should say, which should be worth about 900 million. Basically, it was quashed. Gary Neville wasn't happy as the owner of Salford City, no doubt. Stan Collymore also kicked off. And in the Mail, it said Forest are reportedly one of 10 clubs who said they wouldn't vote for that. What do you think about it, Thames? On the face of it, it's poor form, I guess, but do we need to wait for much more information and know why these clubs are voting for it? Is it purely self-interest, or do they want I can't imagine they want a better deal for the EFL. What do you think's going on?
Yeah, of course it's self-interest. And you don't have to be anti something else to be pro your own football club, do you? But those teams in the Championship have even less matchday income, even less commercial partnership income, and even less broadcast income. So against a backdrop of every sport, including the one I work in cricket, having this threat of reduced broadcast revenues in the future, to Mikey's point, the Premier League keeps signing deal after deal after deal after deal at incremental levels in territories all around the world. And the pyramid sits there thinking, you're getting fat on this. You're not actually laying that many bricks. You're just spending more and more on the same pool of footballers, making the very upper reaches of it richer and richer and richer. And the idealist in all of us says, of course, that should trickle down through the football pyramid. But to vote that through, you're voting away cash from your own turnover. And we've just spoke about broadcast revenue being one of the three streams available to Forest. So you could argue both ends against the middle or day on this. But what are Forest going to do with their vote when they're in a situation where they're trying to get every single pound of cash they can into that football department to drive the wages we're able to offer, to drive the transfer fees that we're able to reach, to sign the players that are going to improve our side. So I do understand their viewpoint if they vote against it. I think in an ideal world, of course, the pie would be bigger and bigger and bigger, and there'd be more trickle down to the pyramid, which we're a part of for 21 years, don't forget, and probably reliant on more of that coming down. But this is one of the elements that we benefit from. We have a golden share of Premier League broadcast distributions. You don't have that in the Championship. They want more. The detractors would say, do it on sporting merit then. Get yourself into the Premier League, as several clubs have before you. The idealists would say, we're loaning your players. We're developing your players. We're a vital cog of the football machine that allows the Premier League to flourish. We deserve this cash. Whatever your personal view is, how are you going to vote when your salary, your loyalty, your ownership stake is in a club that would lose money to facilitate giving it to others? I've sat on the fence there, but hopefully I've kind of framed the debate that Forest and all the clubs will be having internally.
I suppose the worry is, Greg, that we might be on the other side of the relegation fence this time next year, or at very future seasons. You know, you only ever one bad season away from relegation, and this hasn't been a good season. So are we cutting off our nose to spite our face by not voting for more money for EFL potentially?
I mean, Temps just explains it so well there, doesn't he? That we've got to vote on where we are at this point in time, haven't we, I suppose? And where we are is a Premier League club, and we've got to vote in the sense which will benefit us. And I suppose if the worst did happen over the next few seasons, you'd have your parachute payments and we would be a very strong team ready to go again. But eventually these yo-yo clubs do, West Broms, Norwiches, they do settle down and stay down there. And like I've said before, I think the ridiculous stat is 3% of teams that are promoted survive more than 10 years in the Premier League. So it's incredibly tough. And this possibly makes it even tougher to get yourself established in there. But I do feel that we are just showing the signs of wanting to become that established Premier League. So get through this season, get through the next season. And I think you'll see it, because there'll be, 8 or 9 teams behind us who've come up after us who will be fighting to do what hopefully we'd have done.
I suppose, Mikey, from a sporting romance point of view, it's all a bit cynical as well. You've got an affinity for Hartlepool, who aren't in the league anymore, but were recently. I grew up around Shrewsbury, clubs like that are central to their communities. I don't know. Can you understand self-interest of, I'm not saying Forest, because we don't know what's happening, but clubs who don't vote for these things in the long term?
I can't, because we've got an invite to the party now, haven't we? We're in it with whatever cliche you want to use, shopping, different supermarkets, whatever. We're in the main bit now. So, Temps mentioned 2 decades or so out of it. We've now finally got in it. Of course, we're going to look after ourselves. We spent the first part of this talking about why the top 10 are looking after themselves. Well, that's what we're doing. We're just looking after ourselves. You could say we might get relegated, but at the moment, we are a Premier League club. So we're going to vote and think and act like a Premier League club. I think where my head's at is, you've basically just got 2 options with this, right? You either completely separate and have the Premier League as a completely separate entity with its own rules, own wealth distribution, and then you have all the EFL clubs and even the non-league club. I've got a Hartlepool top on, we're in the 5th tier. So you could do it that way, or you could just trickle it down like we're doing. But there's a view. I mean, is it like, it's not the right phrase to use, but is this like a charity payout? I mean, what's the thinking behind it here? So, and how far does it trickle down? Does it trickle down to a Hartlepool in the 5th tier? I know they're probably not, because they're non-league, but if we got into League 2, will it trickle down to Hartlepool? I mean, who knows? I don't know the right solution for it, but it goes back to the first thing I said right at the start. We're creating closed shops here, and it doesn't feel fair, and it isn't very romantic, and we are going to eventually turn into an NFL team where you basically got 16 or 17 teams consistently in the top league, and then 3 or 4 going up and down, up and down. And unless somebody comes up with a better solution and a better way of working, logic tells me that's how we're going to evolve into, unless the top teams sod off and join the Super League, and then everybody sort of jumps up a step or two. That's just life, isn't it? It's not. It doesn't feel fair, though, does it, Matt? I mean, I don't think it's fair.
No, I think the cynicism kind of frustrates, but then Evangelos Marinakis doesn't have that mentality, does he? Because that's why he's got where he is. And, you know, he's got loftier ambitions for the football club than any of us have. I mean, he wants to run, you know, before we can walk, in a sense. But, yeah, it's a difficult debate and probably one that needs a lot more, you know, insight and development than we can offer here. But I hope we can accommodate the EFL clubs more, especially the ones who are struggling. But then that's another question. Do you, if you're Bury and you've got a terrible owner, do you say, well, here's 5 million quid, bail yourself out, and he wastes the money and they're right back where they are? I don't think it's a simple debate at all. And I think we'd be wrong to try and simplify it, certainly. Does anyone want to chip in quickly with anything else before we move on to actual football talk?
Comment quickly, sorry, Greg, on the lease holding with the City ground. So there's been a few questions in the comments about this. So one positive outcome here would be a purchase of the freehold, obviously, and just using that once in a lifetime opportunity to put that one to bed, to not be beholden to a landowner and have complete freedom within the planning framework to do what you need to do without renegotiating rents at periodic moments in time. So it's clearly come to a head. There's clearly an impasse over negotiating an annual ground rent, but there's still a certain restriction when you're doing that on leased land rather than land that you own the freehold to. So for all of the posturing and the negotiation we've spoken about in recent weeks, there is a huge positive to come out of this if they can negotiate a purchase of the freehold, which is an intelligent way to inject capital into the club that isn't tied to your football operation. And I just wonder if that prospect is closer than ever at this point.
Gregor or Massa, the council likely to want to give up the freehold. Is it in their interest temps to do that for a good settlement?
Well, I'm hearing they need a few quid, right? There's a massive gaping hole in those finances for a period of time now. You're negotiating with a commissioner placed in by central government rather than the officials that have been in place during the period of the accumulation of this deficit. So without getting into local politics, it feels like a conversation which could be engineered. They want to give it up. Everything's got a price, right? If they need quick cash, this is one way to do it. They've got an aspirant owner who wants to lay a lot of bricks and doesn't feel that he can at the minute because he's got no certainty over the holding of that land. So it's again going to be a negotiation. There's going to be two parties that either arrive at a figure that they're both happy with or neither of them are happy with. But getting that deal done does remove certain shackles. And I hope that conversation takes place if it isn't in the embryonic stages already.
You won't come in, Greg, before.
No, not anymore. Temps just says it all, doesn't he? I mean, that's been a deep 35 minutes. But yeah, it is. It's just going to dominate us and dominate the news for the rest of this season. And then when it all changes next season, but should do a financial fair play on my lifestyle, I think I'd be getting a points deduction. So, yeah, I'm done.
Go on, Mikey, yeah.
Sorry, Matt. Sorry, mate. I was just add one more thing. You know, there's enough money swilling around football to make me feel very sad when I see situations like what's happening at Hartlepool, like what's happening at Bury and Reading. But it goes back to my point. I use the word charity payments. It's the wrong term for me to say, but Temps hit the nail on the head. Do we just say, you know, there's 5 million quid and bury yourself out? I think you have to dig deeper, go get right underneath the skin of it, and even ask questions around, you know, this fit and proper person's test. Now, who are these people running these clubs in the first place? You know, you've got to help yourselves before the wider pyramid step in to help. So I think it's very easy for me to say Premier League, give everyone more money, support your local clubs, support grassroots. That's the easy thing. But I think, you know, they have to help themselves as well. I mean, some of these people running these football clubs, honestly, it just makes me very, very sad when you see the amount of money swilling around. Like I said, you know, I wrote some notes before. I was running out of zeros, you know, for the amount of money that's going around. You know, this turnover's this turnover's this. Just huge amounts. And then you see people can't pay League Two players' wages. It's just it is very sad. So I just hope they come up with the fairest system. Even that will have massive holes in, and people like us will just debate it over and over. But let's just try and get something that's at least fair and encourages a little bit of sporting integrity. So you might get to see another Forest from the 70s, or you might get to see, you know, some other teams jump up the league and have that romantic dream where, you know, that they sweep all before them and then just hit the juggernaut, which is, you know, your top 10. That's fine. Just anything like that. I just don't want to see the same teams over and over and over again, because it doesn't enthuse me at all. And that's my final word on it now.
Yeah, I mean, I did say earlier rich idiots can buy football clubs, but they shouldn't be allowed to, really. It's just how you filter, you know, sift through the idiots from the people who know what they're doing, who have the cash to back it up. And obviously the fit and proper person test has failed repeatedly in that sense. So that would be way at the top of the list. But how you draw up a good one that actually works, again, is another difficult question. Right, we've done 38 minutes of pretty in-depth chat about off-field stuff. People have stuck with us. In fact, we're up to 550 viewers. So do us a favour. We will talk football now. But if you haven't already, hit like, hit subscribe. Consider becoming a channel member. Give us a good review on iTunes. I do keep reading those. Right. Let's talk about Luton a bit more. We've discussed it at length, but it's such a big game. Greg's obviously feeling very excited. Is anyone feeling terrified on the other two lads or not?
No, certainly not terrified, because I believe we're a better team than Luton on paper and on grass. I want to see an attacking side. There'll be some injury doubts, always is, of course, but let's get the wingers on from the start. Let's see Elanga and Hudson-Odoi take the game to them. Let's pick Bolly for me, as I said before, deal with that deep crosses from deep, diagonal punts and the threat that exists in the box. But let's go with confidence. Let's channel a bit of Greg here. We're going to play Luton Town. They've been struggling. We've been struggling. Our squad's better than theirs. The sum total of our squad is better than theirs. And I just want to see a positive front foot performance that can make us feel good about our side again.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Yeah, just to give a quick team news update, because Rob Edwards did press today. He said no one's back who's missed previous games, but Tarith Chong, who went off in the week, is fit, which is a shame because he's a decent player. But no Adebayo, and basically they've got the same squad that played against Bournemouth. So they are down to the bare bones, and they are probably physically and mentally damaged, I would say, as we discussed. Just about us and our terms of our team selection. We got a bit of stick the other day for people thought we were a bit heavy on Sangare, and we're debating Sangare versus Yates. What, if you had to choose one of the two, Greg, to start in this game in isolation, purely in isolation, who would you pick?
Yates, and I'll get stick for that. In isolation, I just think he's so experienced. We need a captain on the pitch, and without Yates, it'd go to, I don't know, Gibbs White or someone like that. I think Yates has got that steady head that can control the rest of our team if we need it around us. And I think we do need that guidance in such a huge game. Sangare will eventually take that spot, I'm certain of it. But in isolation, I think tomorrow Yates is the guy to start.
Yeah, I think so. I'll ask the others as well. I put Sangare in my team because he should be good enough to get in our team. But in this game in isolation, that's what I keep saying, like, this feels like a Ryan Yates game. Sometimes games just feel like they suit players. Like, I don't think this game suits Danilo at all. He wouldn't be near my starting 11. But I think we've got a two-week break after this. I think Sangare will come into the team. And I've said this before, if he plays well, then, we're probably winning games because he should be better. He should be a better player than Ryan Yates. I think he probably is, but he hasn't necessarily shown it. But I would personally be very happy if Yates starts this game. And I don't think we were particularly burying Sangare. I looked at how many games he's played. He's only played 12 games for us, and we're in March. I mean, it's been such a broken up season for him. He was just coming into form when AFCON came. I was looking at his decent games. West Ham, Newcastle away, Villa at home. They were in a bit of a bunch just before AFCON. Goes to AFCON, gets injured, comes back, has one substitute appearance, which I thought was a bit ropey, to be frank. I don't think he was particularly encouraging. It wasn't awful, but I don't think he's done a massive amount to justify his place, but he's got the CV. The price tag shouldn't really matter. But in this game, I'd be happy picking Ryan Yates, certainly. What about you, Mikey?
Guess what I'm going to say.
Ryan Yates?
No, I'm going to say I think I'd play Sangare. Let me tell you why.
Oh, good. So, no, that's good. A bit of a different opinion. Go on.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'd also play Felipe and Bolly and drop Murillo. But my thought process is just around the strength and height right in the spine of our team. So the only way I think Luton are going to cause us problems and score against us, and the stats will tell you this, is if they get balls into the box. So I don't think there's any argument that Rio holds weight that doesn't have a Willy Bolly in your team. The reason I go for Felipe next to him is I just feel, and Emery said it really well the other day, is we're just lacking that bit of experience at the centre-back. They're not going to, it's a small pitch, right? They're not going to turn us around or play any sort of 1-2s or get in behind us. And I don't think it's the game for Murillo necessarily to come out with a ball and try and beat the press. I just think it's going to be old school, an old school championship game, whack it into the stand. And I just think we have to line up with strength and experience at centre-back. And that's one of the reasons I'd start Sangare as well. Because if anybody watched the AFCON, it might have been the final or the semi-final. He came on for about 20 minutes and won more aerial duels than anyone on that pitch that had been on for the 70 minutes previous. So he can do it in that pivot role, just in front of the back four. And this is the time, we spent a lot of money on this guy, right? So this is the time when he's got to come back in. You said yourself, Matt, he's had a truncated season. And I appreciate we're going for a bit of a break after this. For me, this is why you spend the money and the outlet on these players. So when it comes to the crunch and when it comes to a tense game, he's played at a high level, get him in there. And that's nothing against Ryan Yates. I just think he's just a significantly better player. So for me, in my head, Felipe, Bolly, Sangare, right in the middle, will nullify anything they've got with Carlton Morris and anybody that's in behind them. And then the players around them, the more dynamic, creative players, should be able to win that game of football. What I don't want to see is take a step back, crosses go into the box, and we just don't head them away because Bolly's not playing or Felipe's not playing, or we've got nobody tracking back like a 6'5" or whatever it is, Sangare heading the ball. So that's kind of where I'm at. I'd go a little bit cautious. If we get through those first 20 minutes, we'll win the game. We'll win the game because we've got enough quality. And like Temp said as well, in the back of their heads, that Wednesday, I mean, when do you ever see that, right? A team 3-0 up and another team coming back and beating them 4-3. I think it's happened 3, 4, 5 times in the entirety of the Premier League. I think the last one was in, 2002, something I read?
2003, yeah.
So 20 years. So that's got it impacted, right? So I'd set up experience, strength, get through those first 20 minutes and you'll win the game.
Some interesting thoughts to unpack there, Temps. And Mikey makes a good point about Sangare at AFCON heading the ball away. Centre halves interesting as well. As Tosh says here, what's Amabamadeli done wrong? What's Murillo wrong? Teams don't generally chop and change centre halves for horses for courses. I mean, obviously, like Virgil van Dijk's a brilliant player in any scenario, but what would you think about mixing the centre-halves up again, and any other thoughts on the midfield debate before we discuss attack briefly?
Murillo being debated in the comments as well, which I didn't expect to see 5 games ago. So look, my centre-half pairing for this one, I've said before, is Murillo and Bolly. I think Murillo is an X-factor player, can play that long ball in behind, but can also find players in the central third, just more composed on the ball, strong as an ox. And what he lacks in experience, he makes up for in his reading of the game, his technical ability, and his ability with the ball at his feet. Bolly, completely different profile of player, right horse for this course, wins his headers and tackles, plays it simple outside of that. The Sangare debate's about trust for me, because his technical ability and his upside is far better than Yates's, but Yatesy doesn't let you down, doesn't have quite such a low floor, will run through brick walls, is tireless and can take on instruction and execute a game plan. So the debate that Nuno's having is not who's the best player, whose footage demonstrates the highest potential, because he knows that it's Sangare, but he can't trust him to be consistent enough to enact what we require from a genuine six-pointer in a relegation scrap in quite the same way he can with Ryan Yates. So what do I want to happen? I want him to pick Sangare, and for Sangare to grab the opportunity, be man of the match and run the show, because he's more than capable of doing that against Luton. But I think with that trust thing in mind, he will probably come down on the side of starting Yatesy. So they're the two big debates for me. But I would give the nod to Sangare and Bolly. I suspect Yates might just edge it, though, because of this perception of his consistency and him having a higher floor than Sangare, despite some technical deficiencies in his game.
Thank you very much to Peter as well for a $1.99 donation. That's very kind of you, Peter. Appreciate that. Does the attack pick itself temps based on availability and, I don't know, just what we want to see in pace up front?
Hopes are out wide. I hope it's Alanga and Hudson-Odoi starting. We'll wait and see on the Taiwo fitness thing. But with Chris Wood available, I'm less concerned about that if he can hit his straps. Taiwo's perhaps looked a bit languid, may or may not miss out on this one. We'll see. But Wood comes in that instance. I think Origi's place is under threat because of the availability and fitness of those guys. And beyond that, Gibbs White has to slot it in behind. And we pick those two screeners in front of the back four, as we discussed. So not too many debates for me, but Nuno surprises all with his previous team selection. He's had time to reflect on that, and I hope he makes more obvious calls this time around.
Yeah, Nuno wasn't asked about team news in his press conference, which was a bit annoying and strange. But he did say that he planned to pack the midfield and dictate it against Brighton, and it didn't work, he recognised, which would certainly indicate that the wingers all come back in. What about you, Greg, from the attacking players you'd like to see in this one? Obviously, as Temp says, Taiwo looked really ropey, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him miss a game certainly soon with an international break. Although I think he's in the Nigeria squad, and I really hate he's in the Nigeria squad. I wish he'd just get right. But you shouldn't begrudge a player playing for his country, should I guess? So, yeah, what do you think about that?
I just think Hudson-Odoi, Alanga, Gibbs-White, pace, that tight pitch with that, you know, we can get a bit of skill through them. That'd be the ones. That'd be the ones to go from, because we are going to have a bit more possession than we used to. What we do with that possession, well, we attack, we get speed down the wings and get some balls in. So, yeah, I think those three are the ones that should really pick themselves on this team tomorrow. All others are really up for debate. I agree with the Danilo one. He was not at his best against Brighton, especially in the first half, and maybe not the game for him to start in. But yeah, Alanga, Hudson-Odoi, Gibbs-White, that excites me. That I see them on the team sheet tomorrow and I think, yeah, we're going for this.
Joe's put money behind a question, so we'll tackle it. But I don't really know the answer, Joe, about is Gio Reyna a toxic teammate?
None of us can answer that.
Unless you're going to say yes, because I don't want to get sued. But yeah,
he's played 90 games for Borussia Dortmund, one of the top teams in Germany, one of the top teams in the Champions League. You don't play 90 games if you're a toxic teammate. He hasn't had the best starts at Forest because he hasn't had the game time. Once he's fit and once he's raring to go, I hope we see him in the last few games in the running of the season. But we're never going to know behind closed doors. You can only look at where he's been and what he's done so far. And to play for that many games, you're not a toxic teammate.
I'm just looking at the lineups from the Luton game. Did we have two keepers on the bench? Or, like, we didn't have any kids on the bench. We did in the previous game. So, no, like I said, no one asked Nuno about fitness. So until Nuno asks him, I do think it's a really weird signing so far. But if a player's injured, then a player's injured. So we're still missing Olarena and players like that through injury. It's just, it's very frustrating. And I hope we see more of Gio Reyna, because I think we will need something off the bench. You know, you can't bring on Cech Kwiatkoski for Morgan Gibbs-White when you're chasing a game is, you know, certainly not ideal. So, yeah, if there's not, if it's anything beyond injury, then it's certainly a weird one. But can't really say, we can't go out bad mouthing players when we don't know the answer. So yeah,
I assume it's a knock. I do. I think that's the whispers you hear, that he's just not fit yet. And it does seem to be from the American national side you hear about this toxic teammate thing. So not from his club side. So it's not a concern. Get him on the pitch sooner rather than later.
Forest briefed, or Nuno said, I don't know which, that he had a knock 2 games ago. So if he's not back after the international break, then you'd want a proper update on where he is from the manager in a press conference. So we'll wait for that and see when and if it's put to Nuno. Right, Mikey, any thoughts on this game before we move on to any other business?
Yeah, just a comment. And I thought, so the question wasn't asked about team lineup or substitutions or the fact that he thought he could go to Brighton and dictate a midfield against Brighton. Makes me wonder what questions were asked, because they're the key things that everybody wants to know. I think my worry is, you know, everybody makes mistakes. You know, when that team came out against Brighton, it baffled a lot of us, including myself. I just don't want us to beat ourselves tomorrow. Like, we can debate who plays alongside Murillo, but that's really the key, right? And maybe Yates or Singare. Everyone else will pretty much have the same team. I just hope the one man that's picking this team picks that team. You know, Luton is a significantly smaller pitch than Brighton, yet we didn't play any of our explosive pacemen, which is baffling. So I'm just hoping, like I said, people learn from the mistakes and we go there, get through that first 20 minutes, and then have our players on the pitch that can win that game, because we are significantly better football team than them. I'm talking like a football team on the pitch. And we should win that game. So let's hope at 2 o'clock, when the team name comes out, it's got Alanga on it, it's got Hudson-Odoi on it. You know, Gibbs-White's playing the 10, and we can see what we're trying to do, and we're trying to use our strengths, because we didn't do that against Brighton, and I don't want us to beat ourselves. So I just got frustrated when, you know, we're not asking the questions that everybody wants to hear. The press, I mean, talking to Nuno. Like, people have got to ask him.
So someone asked him about team selection. I didn't quite hear who it was because they didn't mic up the journalists. But yeah, the first question was about VAR, which I found a little frustrating. But I shouldn't dig out journalists because I know how difficult the job is. Right. What else was I going to say? Oh, yeah. I mean, if we don't win the game and we perform and Nuno picks a good team, then there's still 9 games to go. It's just if we lose and we don't play well, and that just creates real negativity. And I've said this on every podcast, so I'll say it again this week. The Burnley v Brentford's a really interesting game. I know Greg's absolutely desperate for Brentford to go down. And imagine if they lose that game. Yeah, they are right in the mire. So, yeah, let's see how that goes. Right. Thanks for everyone who's joined us. I'll just throw it out for any other business to the lads. Greg, any other business?
I've got quite a bit, actually. I've added one as well during the... Do you know, because you only do 6 podcasts a week and I walk my dog more than that, I have to find other podcasts to listen to every so often. And Matt Ford tweeted us halfway through the show, reminding us... I think it was reminding me to unmute myself. So ever the professional guy, his podcast doesn't need a shout-out, but Dan the Dog is just hilarious. But there's a Nottingham one that I've been listening to for years, nothing to do with football, and I've often thought, am I the only one listening? But a mate of mine said, have you listened to this before? And I was just delighted to hear it, and it's called A Message from Nottingham. And it's Nay, Skev and Andy just sit around the kitchen table and have a chat about absolutely nothing. And it just cheers me up every week when it's out. So listen to that. And then my one serious one is my mate Sam Perkins again. We visited the QMC on Wednesday. We went to like their science and research facility to hand over a cheque from Stand Against MND for £100,000 to the MNDA and to research, you know, to help PhD students get through, you know, their courses and just to find a cure for this awful disease. And just to repeat that he's handed over a cheque for £100,000 from a charity that is run by volunteers, is run by Sam, you know, a guy who he's not physically able to do much at all. He does it all through this incredible computer system he's got. And so I want to nominate him for fundraising hero in the Just Giving Awards that are coming up soon. So I'm going to put the link out and just ask everyone if you've just, even if you just watch this podcast and want to do something nice, fundraising hero, Sam Perkins, and put it under the outstanding commitment thing. Like I say, I'll tweet it out, and please just do that one thing for me and I'll be delighted.
I'll put the link in the episode notes as well if Greg sends it to me. So yeah, well done Sam, as ever. Temps, anything from you?
Yeah, then I'd follow that. I mean, Sam had us all in tears at his dinner with at the cricket club a couple of weeks ago, both from hearing his personal story and the laughs that we had when some of the sportsmen who'd lent their time were giving us a few stories as well. Just brilliant cause, brilliant fella. And yeah, Greg's a big part of that as well. So well done, mate. I was just going to try and roast him a little bit. You know, Mikey travels all around the world, long haul, but gets it paid for by these multinational conglomerates. Greg, the only person who flies half as much as him is Greg Mitchell. He funds it himself for a combination of employment and some kind of illicit gain that I can't quite work out yet. So I just wanted to know where Greg's millions have come from, really. I know Bitcoin's been flying. Is it that, or is it something more sinister? Are you a secret rapper? Like, where's all the coin coming from, Greg?
Like I say, financial fair play might be doing me, but I'm off to Mallorca cycling in a couple of weeks, so I won't be on for a few days. But, you know, you work hard, you've got to be able to... I'd be able to get out there and make yourself smile a bit. So that's what I do.
Yeah, Greg does have a job. People weirdly comment on here asking if Greg's got a job. Sometimes I do wonder if any of us have got jobs when we're talking in the middle of the day. But yeah. Mikey, anything from you?
Yeah, no, that's great. Just a plug, if that's okay. This is going to be great for people listening on iTunes because I'm going to show something to the camera. But Lindsay, my wife, bought this, and it's a little frame for those that can see it. It's really cool. It's basically got the kits of McGovern, Stuart Pearce, his little boots. It's like handmade. And this guy on Twitter does it for all teams and all sports. And it's really fair price as well. It's one of the best things I think we've bought for a while. So I'll retweet that. I said I'd say thank you because I think it was the last one and we stole it. But I think it just go to order. So if anything wants something cool for birthday or, you know, even Christmas coming up, that you can store. There you go. You know, I love my merch. Look behind me. There's plenty of it on the wall. But no, that's it for me. Apologies for having a moan earlier. I will say as well, Emily on the post-match on Sunday after Brighton channeled her inner Mikey for those that watched that. And I go, right, yo. I loved it. It was one of the best episodes so far. So, yeah, shout out to Emily.
That's one thing I was going to say. It's like the original group of the regulars on today for the first time in a long
days.
Time. I'd sub either of you out to have Emily on, obviously. But yeah, it's been nice to connect again.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. Mikey, you didn't say the name. I don't think you said the name of the person who made that thing. Did you say it or not?
I just said I was going to retweet it, but I will.
It's at Gerg Mitch. He does a million units a week.
That's the one. Yeah, that's the one. It's an MC Kit Frames. It's at Frames Kit, and his name's Martin. Great lad. I'll retweet it after this, but thanks, Mark.
Very good. Just quickly from me, I'm always plugging charity events. If you've got a charity event or something you want to plug, drop me an email, mattdavis@forest-focus.co.uk. It's in the live chat as well, mattdavis@forest-focus.co.uk. And I'll give a shout out when I can to anything like that, like the other lads do. Other thing quickly is, should be able to announce the first live show date early next week or by the back end of next week, I think. Just obviously you know where it's going to be, but just finalising the lineup for that. So keep your eye out for that, and tickets should be on sale soon. Right, I think that covers everything. We've done a full hour with over 500 people watching, which is great. Oh, gosh. Alan asks loads of questions, which is great. It's not the best time question, so I'll throw these questions and just get a name off everyone. Please ask who they think should take corners and free kicks. Gibbs White is too predictable. Just in a name from each of you, starting Toff. With Temps.
Toff.
Okay, Greg?
Can I have two? Corners, Toff. Free kicks, Murillo. Power drives like a pierce shot.
Mikey?
Yeah, I think Toffolo for me. Gibbs White on the edge of the box where he can cause the damage if the ball breaks to them.
Gibbs White from one side for me, Toffolo from another, and I feel free to mix it up. And dead balls. What was that one we took at Brighton where they knocked it and then Nico wasted it? Take better dead ball free kicks, work on them, and I don't really care who takes them particularly. So, right, we shall leave it there. Thanks for your company, everyone. Great to have so many people with us late on a Friday afternoon. We shall be back tomorrow with the post-match show. God, it's going to be miserable if we lose. Come and join
Get
us. Come
out that thought process. It's going to be amazing if we win. All those viewers, everyone's going to be delighted. It'll be the highest viewed show yet.
Or if we do lose, come along and support us. But yeah, we're not going to lose.
We're going to win.
I know.
Hey, Davis, are we going to get a betting tip off this lad or what? Can you cut us in this time? What's the 16-1 banker, Gregory?
I don't know. I just want to be Matt's life coach, I think, and get him out of this negativity. I think both teams are going to score, obviously, but we're going to win it. 3-1, I reckon.
I'm putting Elanga in my fantasy team, I think. So I'll back Forest. I might put Chris Wood in as well and go double Forest attack. And such is my belief, we're going to win.
I did say as well, before we started filming, this chair's dodgy, and I think it's finally just given away on me. So I need a new chair if anyone's called.
You can't solicit merch. We're not that. That's what proper podcasts do, not us. This is going to be the final score. 3-2 Forest, poetic victory. After all the misery this season. So well said, Tosh. Right, we are going on, and Mikey told me he had to go out at 5, so he's going to be in trouble with Mrs. Clark, I'm sure, because it's going on to 5:10. Thanks for your company, everyone. Have a good evening. Thanks to Tem, thanks to Greg, thanks to Mikey, and we shall see you soon.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
It's time for today's Lucky Land Horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply.